I want to give a sort of a simple message today. It's on a basic doctrine. And by the way, greetings to those on the webcast. Good to have you here. We have lots of visitors. I want to welcome all of you and enjoy visitors. It's always nice. The message I'm giving today is sort of a corollary to the message I gave some time ago about whether or not we have an immortal soul. And of course, most of you know that the major churches of this world teach that every person has an immortal soul, and after you die, that immortal soul does different things in their teaching. One of the things, they say it wafts up to heaven and does something, I don't know. But anyway, in that sermon, I showed you that can't be true. One of the scriptures that I used was 1 Timothy 6:16, which says, among other things, God only has immortality. God only has immortality. So we can't have an immortal soul, or we would have immortality too. So it can't be true. So today I want to speak about, a closely related subject, the spirit in man. Now, we know that man does have a spirit, and it's very likely that people that don't understand the Bible confuse that with an immortal soul. Because basically human beings cannot snuff out spirit, and so probably that helps with the confusion that they think the spirit in man is an immortal soul. It isn't. We teach that emphatically that it isn't. But we do have a spirit in us, a spirit that's unique to human beings. Animals do have a spirit, but it is not the same spirit that is in mankind. In that sermon, I showed that the soul can die, Ezekiel 18, verse 4 and verse 20 say, the soul that sins, it shall die. So the soul is not an immortal soul. The soul is a description of living beings. Animals are called souls, and so are people. And one of the issues or problems is that in Hebrew especially, and to a lesser degree in Greek, words have various meanings. And you can use the same word to mean various meanings, and you can use different words to have similar meaning. So it's all kind of confusing since we don't speak Hebrew nor Greek, and so that's a problem. For example, even though it calls animals souls or living souls in the Old Testament, and I showed that last time, Acts 2:41, speaking about that first Pentecost, it says 3,000 souls were added to the church. And of course, the word soul there just means people. And also 1 Peter 3:20 speaks of there were 8 souls on the ark, meaning there were 8 people. And so there's various usages. My title today is The Spirit in Man, Its Reality and Its Purpose. I'll repeat that. The Spirit in Man, Its Reality and Its Purpose. By the way, the hall has been changed a little. I hear a little bit of an echo. And one of the problems I see is they didn't restore the acoustic baffles over here and over here. I don't know why they did that, whether maybe it's coming later. But where I was sitting, I had a pretty strong echo. So let's first see what the Old Testament says about the spirit in man. Hebrew word for spirit is ruach, which is translated several different ways. It's translated wind, it's translated breath, and it's also translated spirit. And so there's the difficulty. A single Hebrew word means two or three, maybe even four, different things. So if you turn now to Job 32, we'll begin to figure out what this spirit, that we do have a spirit and what it is for. Job 32. Job is considered one of the oldest books in the Bible. And I don't know how people come to that conclusion, but most scholars believe it is the oldest, it was the first book probably written of the Bible, the oldest Bible. So if you look at verse 8, Job 32, verse 8, but there is a spirit in man, and this is the Hebrew word ruach, and if you're interested, that's Hebrew, the Strong's number is 7307, if you want to look it up. I mean, it's used over 300 times in the Old Testament. It says, there is a spirit in man, ruach, and the breath of the Almighty gives him understanding. Now this word breath is a different word, and it's the word called neshama. And I spelled it in English as some of the references did, N-E-S-H-A-W-M-A-W. And I did write the Hebrew word. It's Hebrew 5397. If you have a Strong's, you can look it up. Now, it's interesting that it uses this word at this point. This neshama is a special word, actually. It's a special word. And it says, notice that the breath, neshama, of the Almighty gives him understanding. That's a New King James Version. So it gives man understanding. And there's a lot of questions in the translators on how to translate this, because not all of them understand what was being said here. I would like to read it in the New Living Translation. It says in the New Living Translation, but there is a spirit within people, the breath of the Almighty. Actually, I call out the punctuation here. There is a spirit written within man, comma, the breath of the Almighty within them, comma, meaning speaking of the same thing. And it said that makes them intelligent. That makes them intelligent. That's an important thing said there, because what that does, that says we are different than other living souls. Animals are living souls, but this word neshama seldom, if ever, is ever used in relation to an animal. An animal has a spirit, but he does not have what is called neshama. And I tried to prove this for myself, just looking at the references that I had. But I ended up wanting to look at some so-called scholars. They were scholars in their day, in the 1800s, and that's Thiel and Dillich. They were German scholars, and they were very good. What they say here is, indeed, I'm quoting from them, indeed, that which is here said of the human spirit would not be said of the spirit of a beast. It would not be said of a spirit of a beast. And then they say, it is the mystery of self-consciousness, which is here figuratively represented in this verse. And so what it's indicating there is that since this is not used of animals, they don't have consciousness in the same way that we do. I mean, a lot of people think animals are very smart, and some of them can learn a lots of things, and they are relatively smart, but they do not have self-consciousness and the other attributes of a human being, like reasoning, personality, compassion, and so on. They don't have those in full measure as we do. H.W. Jacinthus was another exacting scholar. He also happens to be German, and he published it's a rather famous Hebrew lexicon, and it's used by a lot of people. Mr. Dean Wilson recommended it to us years ago. I remember he recommended it to both Paul and I years ago, and I have it, the lexicon. It's very good. And they say this verse is addressing the human mind. And I agree with that. It's addressing the human mind. Animals have brains, but they do not have minds in the way that we do. So what is the purpose of the spirit in man? Why does God put a spirit in each of us? Well, he has a reason, and I don't know that I could find a explicit scripture that says here's the reason, but if we read God's word, then we eventually can deduce what the reason is. So I isolated in about four different things that I want to isolate here, and I didn't copy this from other sermons or anything, and so I'm not saying it's 100% true. It's, some of it is my own research. So the first one that I established is the spirit of man gives us a link or an attachment to the Creator, gives us a link or attachment to God. And animals don't have that. I mean, animals don't pray to God, not that we know of. And so we have an attachment, a link to God that's unique in God's creation. And that makes us aware that there is a Creator, and it makes us wonder lots of things. Where did we come from? Why are we here? What's the meaning? What is our purpose? And we think all of these things, and we think these things because of the spirit in man. If we had just had a brain like an animal, we probably wouldn't think that. I don't think animals sit around and say, I wonder where it came from. I don't think they reason that way. And when you think about it, if there really is no reason for people to think that we came out of a slime pond, or we swam out of the ocean and beached ourselves, and we eventually became a bird or ape or whatever they say. I don't know what they say nowadays, but that's not true. We know that's not true. And the spirit that we have makes us understand that. And of course, coupled with the Holy Spirit, that makes it sure. For example, Psalm 14, verse 1 says, "Only the fool has said in his heart, there is no God." And you have to be a fool to really say that. Only a fool says in his heart, there is no God. I mean, you can just look at creation. And you have to think, where did this come from? And why is it here? And so on. I mean, human beings think about that. And it's the spirit in man that causes us to think about those things. And we wouldn't naturally think that we came from blind chance. You know, the possibility of us coming from just blind chance is so phenomenally small, it'd be impossible. I remember a saying I heard I don't know if I can say it, I'm saying it from memory, but anyway, this fellow said, they have told us that with 10,000 monkeys typing on typewriters, they could eventually create the Britannica or something. And he said, now after the internet has come about, he said, we know that's not true. In other words, monkeys have been typing on messages for ages on the internet, and there's nothing good come of it, really. So that's the first point. The second is, the spirit in man is like a record of our life. It's like a record of our life. And Mr. Armstrong used to like to say, well, it's like a tape. We store information on a tape. If Mr. Armstrong knew how unreliable tape was, maybe he wouldn't say that. The first computers that I worked on, we had backups on tape. And that was the lousiest system you could think of. Unreliable, very unreliable. Anyway, that's beside the point. But God can store in the spirit of man, he can store the information that is you. He can do that. For example, DNA. Do you understand that you can take, say you take a drink of a soda and you put down your glass, maybe use a straw, and they can take that glass and from the saliva you left on that glass, they can tell who you are. And they do it all the time nowadays. It's amazing what they can do with DNA. I watched a documentary, and they can actually take DNA, maybe a little bit of DNA from some saliva, and they can actually create an image that's not exactly like you, but it looks similar to you. I saw one program where they showed the created image from the DNA, and then when they caught the guy, he was a criminal, they caught the guy and they put him side by side, and it looked so close to him. I was amazed. Of course, some things were wrong, you know, his nose might have been wrong or whatever. But anyway, it's amazing. God created DNA, and if you ever studied DNA, you can understand it's very complex, and yet it's kind of simple. The language of DNA is four bits, and from four bits, the combination is so complex. But I don't want to get bogged down in that. Let's turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 3, and I want to read something there. Speaking of the spirit that is in man, it shows what God does with that spirit. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 19. Ecclesiastes 3:19. For what happens to the sons of men also happens to animals. One thing befalls them. As one dies, so dies the other. So here he's speaking in a physical sense only. Surely they all have one breath. Man has no advantage over animals, for all is vanity. And again, this is all speaking of in a physical sense. We have a physical life, and when that life ends, we go back to dust, as it's going to say as we go on. Then in verse 20, it says, oh, I already read that, didn't I? No, I didn't. All go to one place, all are from the dust, and all return to dust. And again, speaking only of the physical. And then verse 21 talks about the Spirit. Who knows the spirit of the sons of man, which goes upward, and the spirit of the animal, which goes down to the earth? So the spirit of man goes upward, and that's speaking of in the process of dying. You die, and your spirit returns to God. Where God stores that, I don't know. I don't know how you store stuff that doesn't occupy space or so on, but God stores that. But it says the spirit of the animal goes downward and to the earth. When I first started this, I was convinced that animals didn't have spirits, but several times it mentions the spirit of an animal. So it does have, animals do have a spirit, but it is not like the spirit in man. So when it speaks of most people understand when it's talking about you are dust and return to the dust, it's talking about your physical body. Genesis 3:19 says, "Dust you are, and to dust you shall return." So it's speaking of the physical body, and so we see that the spirit returns to God. So this means that God has a way of keeping track of every human being. And you don't need to turn there, but Psalm 147, and heads up, James, Psalm 147 verse 4 says, speaking of God, says, "He counts the number of the stars, and he calls them all by name." And that's speaking of God. And I'd like to show you now a picture. And I forgot my little pointer. And I'm sorry, it's not very bright here, but you can see that. Now, that looks like a bunch of stars, doesn't it? That's not what it is. That's not stars. There are some stars there, but those are galaxies. And what that is a picture from the Hubble telescope, and it's of a portion of the sky about this big. It was described this way by one gentleman. Think of putting a grain of rice on your finger. And then you hold it, you extend it, and then point that toward the sky. And what the portion of the sky that grain of sand is covering, that's how much area that photo is covering. Another one described it this way. If you had a straw that was 8 feet long, and you looked through the straw, and looked at the sky, that's how much sky we're seeing here. It's 24 millionth of the sky. And if the picture was a little brighter, you could see that some of those galaxies are red. What that means, if it's red, that means it's really, really, really far away, like billions and billions and billions of miles. In the upper left-hand corner, there are some galaxies that are red there. So consider Psalm 147. Okay, we can have the lights back now. It says that God counts all the stars. The question is that the stars in our galaxy, or is that also the stars in the millions and millions and millions of other galaxies that are out there? I think it means all of them. He has the ability to count them and to name them, call them all by name. That's what it says. By the way, that's from the Hubble telescope, and the Hubble is a old hat. Now they put up another thing called the Webb, and it's even bigger and better and so on. So who knows what we'll see from that. My next point, and I need to move along here, is the spirit in man is overwhelming evidence that we are not just a higher form of animals. You know, that's what the scientists tell us. It says, well, you think you're special, but really, you just adapted after billions and billions of years, and, you know, probably one time you were an ape or monkey or something, and that's not true. We know that's not true. But the spirit in man proves that that's not true. The spirit in man makes us much different than a monkey or ape or whatever, or the smartest animal that you can think of. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians. First Corinthians 2, and beginning in verse 9. And Paul is speaking here, and he says, "Eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those who love him. But God has revealed them to us through his Spirit." "For the Spirit searches all things, yes, the deep things of God." And here it's talking about the Spirit of God. But this section also speaks about the Spirit in man. And the next verse says, "For what man knows," it's asking a question, "for what man knows the things of a man except the spirit of the man," or in other words, the spirit in man, "which is in him. Even so, no one knows the things of God except the Spirit of God." So, like I say, it's mentioning both spirits. We have two spirits. In the church, you have the spirit of man, you have the spirit of God, and the spirit of God meshes with the spirit in man. That's the way it works. "Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the spirit who is from God, that we might know the things that have been freely given to us by God." And so, this section is saying the Spirit of God teaches us all these things, but it is the Spirit of man that makes that possible for the Spirit to attach and amplify our spirit. Let's turn to Ecclesiastes 3, verse 11. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 11. And Ecclesiastes is sometimes difficult to find, so I'll wait a few seconds here. And here's what it says there, Ecclesiastes 3, verse 11. I want to mention, I'm reading this from the Amplified Version. And the Amplified Version is kind of strange in that it gives explanations as it goes along. Verse 11 in the Amplified says this, He has made everything beautiful and appropriate in his time. He has also planted eternity And then they, in parentheses, a sense of divine purpose. I agree with that. In the human heart, heart is a metaphor for the mind, a mysterious longing, this is explanation, a mysterious longing which nothing under the sun can satisfy except God. That's their description of planning eternity in the heart and mind. Yet man cannot find out, and they say comprehend or grasp, what God has done, and then they say his overall purpose from the beginning to the end. Some, it's kind of hard to read that and relay what all is being said there because of the way they do it. Anyway, that's number three. Number four is the spirit in man gives us a desire to consider and contemplate eternity. And it's fairly certain that animals don't do this. I'm pretty certain, since we can't talk to animals, we're not absolutely certain, but pretty certain that they don't sit around and think about, I wonder what happens after this, after I get old and croak, what's going to happen? Anyway, by way of conclusion, let me sort of summarize the 4 points that I gave you. Number one, the Spirit gives us a connection to God, our Creator and Maker. This Spirit contains a record of our life, and I could tell you lots of stories about DNA research, but I don't have time. Our spirit proves we are not just another creature, and our spirit gives us a desire for eternity. As Ecclesiastes says, God has planted eternity in our mind. So we need to rejoice that we are not just a higher animal, that we are a creature that has the potential to eventually be in God's family. And if we hold to the truth and continue to the end, we'll all be there.